This is One True Pairing. This is the true story of more than just a man. This is the story of a man troubled with heartache, deceit, and vengeance. Follow along as you learn about the life and struggles of DJ Holmes.
At the end of the Christmas break, DJ woke up and sent Aaron and Hakeem a text to confirm their time to leave for Tallahassee. The three had been friends since DJ's junior year in high school. They all went to the same church, and in high school, it was both Aaron and Hakeem who motivated DJ to work harder academically. Just being friends with them motivated him. It was nothing they had done specifically. Ironically, by the time they got to college, it was DJ who was the strongest of the trio academically. Aaron was just 1 year ahead of both of them. While they drove, they discussed many things, but the one thing that was most on their minds was why DJ had been ghost all of the time recently. Cornered, DJ could only respond by asking, "What do you mean?" Aaron was the bold one of the duo. "Don't even bother lying. Your roommate Eugene confirmed you don't spend too many nights in the dorm room." Without skipping a beat, DJ added, "I don't. But I don't understand why." "That's any concern of yours. I never ask where any of you are or what you're doing. To be honest, I treat you like the adults you are. If there are parts of your life that isn't my business, then I don't make it my business." Hakeem had a quiet way about him, but when he spoke, it was at times very absolute. Somehow, something DJ said struck a chord with Hakeem. "You're right. It's none of our business," added Hakeem. Aaron looked like the wind had been sucked out of his sails. He wasn't too pleased with how the conversation had suddenly turned. He wasn't going to push this further. "Well, yes, he was. I don't understand. We tell you everything." "Actually, no, you don't. It is true that I'm in the room when you tell your business, but if I'm not in the room, I don't learn anything. None of you go out of your way to tell me anything about your lives. It just so happens that I've never told anyone my business or that of my family unless I thought of them as family. Hell, if I happen to be in my room when we normally go to dinner, you will call the girls, Marcus, Owen, but not me. I'm continuously excluded. If it weren't for the girls, then I wouldn't even be a thought for any of you. But I think of you as family." This truly pissed DJ off. Never mind the intrusion into his personal business. DJ firmly believed Aaron to be lying. DJ never felt like he was truly part of the group. He always felt closer to the girls. Maybe that was because as he was becoming more and more of who he was as a person, and so he pulled away from the fellas. Nevertheless, there was never any proof the guys were close to him. In fact, there were times DJ was told to his face that he wasn't wanted or needed around. It was because of the girls that he was often invited. DJ had enough self-respect for himself and inner strength that he never really let that affect him on a deeper level. His life was changing and he saw alternatives even before they rejected him. In fact, DJ found it all rather ironic that they would even care that he was missing. He felt that if anyone would have been upset, it would have been Chelsea and by extension, Danielle, Yvette, Bianca, Riani. He would often spend time with them when the fellas were nowhere to be found. So when Aaron felt he was in the space to call DJ family, DJ blew up. "You ain't my fucking family. You are my family when y'all made trips back home and left me on campus all those times without telling me. Y'all weren't my family when I told y'all I wanted to run for a position in SGA my sophomore year, and you, Aaron, actively tried to talk me out of it. Family, at least my definition of family, doesn't try to hold me back. Family supports and motivates. When the fuck have you ever done any of those things for me? I just met Chelsea, and she does more of that than any of you do collectively. So what? What? Tell me. The power, passion, and hurt in DJ's voice was thick. It rang in his car. It could not be denied. It was also the first time they saw themselves in DJ's eyes. They were embarrassed. They, both Aaron and Hakeem, truly did see DJ as part of their family, and yet they could not deny his claims. It was clear they had taken DJ for granted. The rest of the ride to Dawn was quiet. When they arrived, DJ was tired from the drive because he drove the entire distance without Aaron or Hakeem's help. He planned to simply hang out in his room and just study for a class. Then, DJ got a text from Payne telling him to dress in a suit and tie and arrive at the frat house at exactly 6 p.m. DJ did as instructed without responding to the text. So this was, so it was part fact, part fiction. What I mean by it was part fact is that it happened. But the order in which it happened, is erroneous. It's not exactly how certain things happen. And then, the second part too, it's not quite how things happen, is a lot of that happened in my head, right? Like certain things were said and a conversation kind of developed in my head in real time while certain things were being said to me. It didn't happen in a car. We weren't on our way back from Christmas break. But when you're writing a story, you can't get bogged down with creating things exactly as they were. And then, you know, I'm remembering what happened 25, 30 years ago. I can't remember what happened first, what happened second. And it definitely didn't happen in a car. It happened in a dorm room. But I needed to put an end to a particular storyline, or at least make a transition to an end to a particular storyline. And I'm trying to do that as I move into another storyline. And so that's why this particular story is called Transitions. Let's talk about what was specifically talked about. We were talking about my friends were basically coming to me and basically saying, hey, we know that you're gay, without those words coming out of their mouth. That's what they were telling me. And I was playing the dumb role, like, oh, I don't know what you're talking about. Or like, you know, why don't you just say what you want to say? You know, sensing that they were too, I'm not going to say ashamed to say it, but they just didn't want the words to come out of their mouths. Well, because you don't want to say it, I'm not going to say it. So why are we talking about this? It was pretty much like the attitude that I had. But what had specifically occurred was there was a weekend my freshman year. So a lot of this happened my freshman year, even though I'm telling the story as if it happened my junior year. I needed to get it out. I needed to get it out because it was pivotal for me. Like it told me a lot about who my friends were and who weren't my friends, or who was easily manipulated and who could manipulate. So my freshman year, the spring semester of freshman year, I was with someone, found someone, he became my boyfriend, and, he was just like, hey, let's do this. And I was like, but we have a, there's a party, there's a dance or whatever on campus. I really want to go. I've been telling my friends I wanted to go. And he was just like, okay, but your friends don't really care about you. I'm telling you the truth. That's basically what he said. Like, your friends don't care about you. And let me tell you how I know your friends don't care about you. They're not coming to your room. Like, I'm here. I'm here with you. They're not calling your room. I'm here with you. You know what I'm saying? Like, he was like, even when you go to dinner with them, it's a certain time you're going to check on them to see if they're ready. Like, nobody's calling you. And so, because I remembered all of that, like, that was part of, like, the argument that I had with them. Like, again, those were not things that I had specifically said. But because at that time, like, he had just said those things. This was a Friday night. The party was on a Friday night. By the time that I returned back to my room on Sunday, or I should say back to the dorm on Sunday, because look, when I left, I didn't take any clothes. I didn't take anything, right? I just left because in my mind, we were coming right back. We were going to come right back. I ended up having like one of the nicest weekends I had ever had in Baton Rouge, definitely. I spent time with him. I really got to know him. I really got to fall in love with him. And then to return back to Sunday, finding out that they led this, you know, mission on campus to try and find me, where is he, like, calling the cops type stuff, call my mother type stuff. Like, everyone was involved, friends on campus, walking the campus, looking for me, trying to find me. I'm like, hold up, wait a minute. Like, none of this shit makes sense. None of this makes sense. Like, for real, like, y'all didn't care about me, and not all of a sudden you all care. Like, I don't get it. I really honestly did not get it. So then, you know, my mom calls me. Well, first of all, like, the audacity to like, you know, like, the first thing out of their mouth is your mom has been looking for you. But come in the room, let's talk, as if to say you're more important than my mom, or like whatever it is that you want to talk to me about is more important than what my mom wants to talk to me about. Like, how dare you? Like, that's some fucked up shit. But okay. You know, like, I didn't have enough in that moment. Like, I really didn't know what was happening until I got into the room. First thing that I heard when I was walking into the dorm room was, your mom wants to talk to you. Oh, okay. Like, I didn't think anything of it. But come into the room. So we start talking, and they hold bullshit. Then I realized, you know, what was happening. Then, you know, as I walk to the room, I'm coming up with my excuse. Like, what am I going to tell my mom? Like, you know, talking to them is one thing, but talking to my mom is another, because she's, you know, a walking bullshit detector. And so, you know, I called, and my aunt answered the phone, which told me that, you know, they were really worried. So then my mom came to the phone, and she was just like, are you okay? And she was just like, where were you? And she was like, nope, don't answer that. I'm going to call you back in about 5 minutes. And then I was like, oh shit. She called me back. And like, I just told her I was with my cousin, and we were hanging out. She was like, you a fucking lie. I already called him. You gotta realize that this was the 90s, right? This was the 90s. Like, you protected that truth as much as you possibly could. And in that conversation, my mom pretty much basically knew what I was doing, even though I couldn't say it. And to take it one step further, she specifically asked me if I was gay. And I, of course, lied. I should have told her right then and there. I should have. But I felt I needed her love. I felt I still needed her love and her support. I had basically lost her trust in that moment, but I felt I still needed her love. And it felt to me like her love was conditional upon me saying, you know, that I was straight. So I went to bed that night. I mean, I think I went back into the room. I did. I went back into the room and I was just like, that's not your business. Like, why would you even call my mom? Why would you, like, nah, you don't call my mom with some bullshit like that. It doesn't make sense. Like, you don't do that. And they were like, but you were missing and you couldn't be found. And I was like, I don't give a fuck. I'm 18 years old. I go whatever the fuck I want to go. Like, and you don't get to know where I go. You know what I'm saying? Like, you're not my protector. None of you is my protector. And so, I just kind of, you know, like, I would, you know, I kind of kept my distance from them for a while. And then they started coming to get me, believe it or not, honestly. They started to come to get me for dinner and all the other good stuff. And so I was like, oh, well, maybe, I guess. The girls, they definitely, you know, were calling on me, trying to make certain that I was here and there and wherever I said I was going to be. One friend, it must have been later, like maybe a week or two later, she saw me and she, you know, I was still trying to duck and dive because everybody on campus knew that I was missing. Everybody. And everybody tried to get out of me where I went. And of course, pretty much everyone knew because they saw who I walked into the dorm with. But I guess they just wanted confirmation. But anyway, this friend of mine, this female friend of mine, when she saw me, she called my name. She called my nickname, and she was so happy to see me. She hugged me, and then she was like, what? The last, before she could get anything out, she punched me in the stomach. It was such like a good moment, but it was a painful moment, but it was a good moment at the same time. It kind of like encapsulated everything that had just happened to me. It was like, it was a punch to the gut, basically. It was a punch to the gut and a hug and a punch to the gut. I got the hug from the boyfriend and I got the punch to the gut from everybody else in my life. And that, you know, I guess that's some way of saying like what it feels like to be gay in America, or at least what it felt like to be gay in America, specifically in the South, a black gay man in the South at that time. Yeah.